Imagine you're an Uber driver just trying to make it through your shift, when out of nowhere, a man steps into your path. You hit the brakes, but it's too late. A shattered Uber driver is left convinced they're responsible for a tragic death. But as we dig deeper, the truth is darker and stranger than anyone could have foresaw. This was no accident. It was a desperate man's final attempt at suicide. Welcome to Top Priority Chronicles, Episode 5, where today we unravel a story of loss, desperation, and hard truths hiding in plain sight. Welcome back, and thank you for rejoining me for episode number 5. Today's story is a sad one, but I must say, satisfying when you get to the truth of the matter. So I got this case about a year and a half ago, about early 2023, and my initial objectives were to go to the scene of the accident and complete a scene investigation to see if there were witnesses, see if I could obtain any surveillance cameras from any businesses or cameras that may have been close by. The second objective is to take pictures of any posted speed limits. The third objective is to locate the vehicle that was involved in the accident, which had been impounded by police, and it was one of their impounded lots. And for those that don't know, the state, you can now locate vehicles that have been impounded online. And so initially I started it off by just going to the scene and taking pictures at the accident scene. There was a auto body business right on the corner, and so I made contact with the owner of the business, asked him a few questions about the accident, and initially when I got the information, the insurance companies don't give you a lot of information, so they couldn't tell me which way the driver was driving. Actually, they did tell me, but they were wrong. The gentleman at the car dealership let me know which side of the street the accident had occurred on. He was also able to let me know that it did not happen close to his shop, but on the other side of the street where his cameras could not reach. He also let me know when the incident occurred, it was pitch black outside, which also gave me a better idea about the time of the accident. Let me know it was after dark. So, you know, after going and meeting the gentleman at the car dealership, at the auto body shop, and talking to him, getting as much information as I could from him, I then concluded my investigation for that day. I had walked down the street I'm not sure if those in Portland may be familiar with MLK, close to Gertz Road. And if you know, it's a kind of an abandoned road in the back alleys of MLK, down the back alleys. And it is a road that goes from one side of MLK and it goes around the back route and it goes to the other side of the busy intersection. So I was not sure on what part of Gertz Road the accident occurred. So after talking to this gentleman at the car body shop, it let me know it was more likely the accident occurred on the other side of Gertz Road. So again, took that back road, traveled to the other end of Gertz Road, and I just took pictures. It is it was a homeless camp set up there, and it was pitch dark outside. So I got out of my vehicles. It's also a really dangerous intersection because it's a road, a back alley road that leads onto the main intersection, Martin Luther King Boulevard, which is a major highway here. And there's also, you can also turn onto that street. So it's so dark that cars turning onto that street can't really see and turning off of that street, you really have to kind of look for headlights. Otherwise, you can't see what's coming. So, considering it was a dangerous intersection, I took a couple of pictures and I got out of there. The next day, I made a call to, actually, I got online and I researched to find out where the vehicle was located. So then I can make contact with the owner of the driver of the vehicle, who was an Uber driver, and to go and visit his vehicle and take pictures of the vehicle so we could determine where the impact was made on his vehicle. So I was able to locate the vehicle online. I called the body shop, the vehicle was located, and I spoke with the lady over the front and I asked permission to come and visit the vehicle and take pictures of the vehicle. It is really important as an investigator to not waste your time by telling the people. It's strategic because it's a case by case scenario. But in this case, I wanted the auto body company need to know that I was coming out, that I had been asked to take pictures of the vehicle in question, although it had been involved in a car accident and there was a fatality involved. So when I got to the body shop, which was about an hour later, the owner of the body shop had asked for me to produce a document stating that I had permission to take pictures of the vehicle. And I quickly let him know the person who answered the phone only told me I needed to bring a request from the insurance company asking me to take pictures, and so that's what I brought. Make a long story short, the owner was not willing to allow me to take pictures of the vehicle. He stated the vehicle had already been taken apart, and he stated that he would contact the owner of the vehicle and that the owner would then contact me. So, that was short-lived. I left, and about maybe a couple of hours later, the owner of the vehicle, the Uber driver, called me, gave me his. He basically was disappointed that the insurance company was sending someone out without calling him. And that is a very common practice of insurance companies to send someone like me, who was a part of the SIU Special Units Investigation, to come out and do additional checking so everything pans out and that they feel confident about paying out on the claim. So when the gentleman, basically expressed disappointment about being investigated, he also told me his rendition of the accident. He let me know that he was driving southbound on Martin Luther King Boulevard, which in the insurance notes it said he was driving northbound. But that's neither here nor there. He did let me know that the gentleman had walked off of the middle median and he was the vehicle that was immediately next to the median, and he just remembered hitting someone. He also had a dash cam that he was going to send over to the insurance company to help with further evidence. That concluded our information. He basically said that he could not give permission because the car had already been taken apart, so there was no way that we could take pictures of the vehicle in the accident state. So that was one task now taken off of my plate. The next thing I was ordered to do was go back out and see if I can't obtain witnesses of the accident scene. So my third time, actually this was my second time out to the scene. Instead of going on the side that had the auto body shop, I went to the other side of Gertz Road, which I now knew was the correct intersection of where the accident took place. So, when I got there, it was in the daytime. I remembered this time to go early in the day. And when I was there, it is a homeless camp. And so there was a vehicle that was parked on the sidewalk, and there were two people in it. And I knocked on the vehicle and started introduced myself, told them I was an investigator, and I let them know why I was there. I started asking them questions about the recent fatality that had occurred. The female that was in the vehicle recalled the gentleman's name and she knew his name. So I started asking questions about if he was under if she knew him to be abuse any alcohol or drugs. She said she did not. She knew him and she knew that he was a nice guy. And so it started to give us more the deceased started to have character and he started to come to life. As I was talking to this couple, another gentleman overheard me. And he asked, "Who is that?" asking questions about his friend. I introduced myself to him. I told him why I was there. A lot of the time that breaks A lot of people are always suspicious about why you're asking. So, especially folks that live in homeless camps, they want to know if they don't know who you're associated with. So, it's just easy to drop all the anxiety by announcing yourself up front, and then they can decide then if they want to talk to you or not. These folks were really kind this day, and they didn't have any reservations about talking to me about their friend. It sounded like they wanted to make sure that, everything got handled appropriately. So this other gentleman, he was direct friends with the gentleman who had passed away, and he was the needle in the haystack. He was the jackpot of information. And so what he really wanted to do is really talk. So we just talked. I asked a lot of questions. He told me a lot about his friend, and his friend had been a door-to-door cowboy boot salesman, and he had, used to have his own store. He then started doing business at pop-up shops and what do you call those? The markets, that Saturday markets, Sunday markets that they usually have around town. He was selling shoes at those places. After COVID, he fell up on hard times, and he became homeless. He could no longer afford to pay his rent, and he was living out of his truck. More recently, that truck had broken down, and he had just recently replaced the transmission. And so his friend was really, really depressed and really upset, just hopeless about his future and regaining footing in his financial situation. He was living with this friend out of a trailer, and for the last couple of years. And when his truck broke down, it sounds like that was his breaking point. He had made a comment to his friend that he had called his daughter, who he was estranged from, who he hadn't talked to in years, and told her if something happened to him, this is what she should do, and gave her information about his life insurance policy. He also made a comment to this friend that if things, specifically if shit got any worse, he was just going to walk out in the middle of MLK in front of an 18-wheeler and end his life. His friend did not take him seriously. And at the end of the day, that's exactly what happened with this gentleman. He the truck, after he had just replaced the transmission, the battery went dead. And so the friend that I was talking to said that his friend that was deceased was on his way taking his dead battery across MLK to a place called a place across the way that dealt with recharging batteries. But he didn't make it. There was an 18-wheeler that was crossing in front of Gertz Road that first clipped the gentleman and hit him. And I again, we don't know if it if we can't say for 100% if it was accidental or if it was on purpose. But after the evidence that we received on that last day, it seemed as if maybe this was a suicide attempt. The gentleman was first clipped by the 18-wheeler. The 18-wheeler then, when it hit the vehicle, he flew into the Uber van on the other side of the road. And then after the Uber van hit him and he flew over the, you know, he fell on the Uber driver's top of his car. He fell in the middle of the road and another car hit him. So it was three vehicle accident, and the gentleman was dead on the scene. And there was a lot of blood, and there was a lot of cleanup. And the friend came out after he heard, and he knew what had happened, that his friend had committed suicide. And after some time talking to this friend, he was very distraught, but he wasn't emotional. But you could tell that he was distraught and had emotions, high emotions around his friend's death. And I offered, because he was a homeless man, I offered, was it okay if I bought him food? And I asked him, where would you like to get food? And he just asked me to take him down the street to a local burger spot and got him his, a few of his favorite burgers. And then I dropped him back off at his place. And I must say, I couldn't walk away feeling fulfilled. Like, it was nice to know that we solved that, but it was really hard walking away knowing somebody wanted to commit suicide and they were successful at their attempt. That was a hard pill to swallow. Again, I can't confirm 100% that's what happened. But considering the evidence I had, it was a highly likely scenario. And so, in conclusion of tonight's podcast, there are a couple of things I'd like to highlight. Is, first off, never go off what you see at face value. Because initially I thought this was an open and shut case. Like, why are we going out? The Uber driver said he hit him. He said it was an accident. He's got it on dash cam. Why do we need to go out? And had the insurance company not requested more of an in-depth investigation, it would have been left as an accidental death. And the Uber driver could have very well continued just to have a heavy burden of a death on his shoulders. But it turns out that being able to deliver that information to the Uber driver was a huge relief to him. And he had some sense of peace knowing what occurred that day and what was going through the mind of the person who passed away that day. I thought it was also very nice to be able to give the friend some closure, to let them know that somebody was investigating on his friend's behalf, even though he didn't have family and he didn't have anybody else that was doing anything else. The insurance company was doing its due diligence on his behalf to find out what happened. I also like to, last but not least, I would like to first off say that mental health is an issue that is near and dear to my heart. It is a subject matter that has been in my family since even before we've had the words to talk about it. And more recently, it's become more near and dear to my heart due to the challenges of my oldest child. My daughter struggled with mental health challenges as well as suicidal ideation for a few of her early adult years, and it was a challenge to get through. But nonetheless, it was something that once someone expresses a desire to do something to harm themselves, it is imperative that we do not take it lightly, that we do not take it as a joke. And even if they don't act on it, it is imperative that we do. That doesn't mean go and turn them into a psych ward. It doesn't mean that you confront them and talk them out of it. But what it does mean is that you give them the freedom to first off feel their emotions. And second off, you offer resources that when they are able, they know that there is help available to them and that people love them. So today, before I leave, I would like to leave you with a few resources. I would like to leave you with the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 988lifeline.org. That's all one word, not the letters. I mean, yeah, the numbers 988 and then spelled out Lifeline, LIFELINE dot ORG. Or you can call or text 988. They are available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, 366 days on a leap year. So there is not one day they are not available. There's also other resources such as the crisis text line. That's a different text number. You can text hello to 741-741. Or a very helpful website at psychologytoday.com altogether. psychologytoday.com, COM. You can search their website. They have many helpful articles that have to do with mental health. They also have a prompting that will help you find a therapist that is in your area and that accepts your insurance. That was a resource that was given to me by my daughter. And then I said, what about people that don't have insurance or that may have state insurance? And so I went to medicare.gov. That's medicare.gov. And if you don't have health insurance, first off, you can apply. If you do have state insurance, they have providers listed there that are local to you. And that are accepting new patients, and that also accept the insurance that you are assigned to. Also, if you don't have any insurance, there are community mental health centers all over the United States. I urge you to look online and see if your community has a community mental health center that usually have mental health resources at low cost or on a sliding scale or no cost. And so I think that mental health is really, really important. I want to stress the importance of that. I want to make sure that we are all looking out for each other. Most times, people in a mental health crisis aren't in a position to ask for help. So it is very imperative that somebody, they have a friend, a family member that has a heart to reach out when they are not okay and give them resources and maybe even handhold them to those resources. Because if you haven't received mental health services before and you're going to meet a new counselor and it's not a good fit, that could also be very traumatic. So I think it's very imperative that loved ones will support your family members that are in having mental health challenges. You never know when it's your turn. And when you walk with someone through the fire, you let them know that it might get hot, but I am with you. And if you're going to get burned, we're going to get burned together. And that is important, that people that are having mental health challenges know that they are not alone, that somebody cares for them. Help them to see that tomorrow is a different day and they could very well feel different the next day. So with that being said, I want to thank you for chiming in to Top Priorities Chronicles episode 5. This episode was a little bit more emotionally driven than my other episodes just because of the topic content. But I just want to thank you all for hanging with me. I also want to make sure that we are looking out for each other. Doesn't matter where you live, whether you're in we're in the same country or not, we are all a community. And if I'm down, you're down. So it is imperative that we lift each other up. And sometimes all it takes is a phone call, a text message, a letter. Even if you're across the world, don't money or resources should not stop you from staying connected to people that you love and care about. So with that being said, I'm going to end on that note. And until episode next, number 6, I'll see you next time.